Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Sports City. It's your boy TP Timeless back at the helm. Welcome to the roundtable of Sports City. Y'all got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with the chefs. Man, I'm not even going to get into it, man. I got a lot of stuff to roll into, from NFL to MLB. Man, you name it, we got it. We're going to touch everything as much as possible. 60 minutes, y'all are locked and loaded right here with the SEC. How to took off his blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside, the kitchen timeless is alive.
One, two. Check me out right here, yo.
Yo, the sun don't shine forever, but as long as it's here, then we might as well shine together. Better now than never, business before pleasure. P. Diddy and the fam, who you know do it better. Yeah, right, no matter what, be airtight. So when you hear something, make sure you hear it right. Don't make an ass out of yourself by assuming. Our music keeps you moving, what are you proving? You know that I'm two levels above you, baby. Talk me, baby, I'ma make you love me, baby. Talking crazy ain't gonna get you nothing but choke. And that jealousy is only gonna leave you broke. So the only thing left now is God for these cats. And babe, you know you're too hard for these cats. I'ma win cause I'm too smart for these cats. While they making up facts,
in the commission, you ask for permission to hit him. He don't like me, him and Wild White, he was with him. You heard him up, the murderer, smooth shady. Been on the low lately, the feds hate me. The son of me, they say my killing's too blatant. You hesitating, I'm in your mama crib waiting. Duct taping, your fam, destiny lays in my hands. Gat lays in my way. Francis, M to the is H phenomenal. Gun rest under your vest, body your domino. So I could buy a few cars, then I pick a few floors, so I could pick a few holes. Excellence is my present. Never tense, never hesitate. Leave a nigga bit, real quick, real sick. Wrong nights, I perform like Mike. And
Tyson, Jordan, Jackson, Action, Pack. Call the number 917-889-9592. I told you, y'all got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. Sports City, I told you, we got a lot of stuff to dive into. I even got an interesting, I don't want to say personal, but something that's getting to me. And I'm going to save it for the end of the show because I know a lot of people here at Sports City didn't hear about it. So my closeout should be pretty epic or something to take note on around an interesting sport that we all love. I'm not even going to lie. But let me start this one off right. Calling in by way of the state of Michigan. You guys know him as the Brooklynite or Nostradamus, Mr. Knight. Welcome to the roundtable. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm exhausted. What's up?
I feel you, brother. Friday is amongst us, so we should be able to take care of business and at least get in and out of here, and I'll let you rest. I'll let you rest for a little bit. So hopefully I can get you at full strength for 60 minutes and then back to your relaxation with the two puppies. How about that?
Yeah, because I got to go to work 4:30 in the morning. What's going on, though? You all right?
I'm good. Let's get into it. So the first topic I want to talk about, now there's a lot of topics I want to talk about too, but I'm going to try and rush as many as I can to you before we get up and out of this kitchen. Now, last night there was an interesting game, Thursday Night Football. The Seattle Seahawks took their talents to Santa Clara, a.k.a. the new home for the San Francisco 49ers. Your thoughts on the game and some interesting standpoints. If you don't get to all of them, believe me, I will be touching on a lot of what should be discussed here in this kitchen.
Well, I'm not surprised they won because the 49ers are terrible. The Seahawks kind of own the Niners right now. They've beaten them the last four times I think they played them. The Niners offensive line is trash. Colin Kaepernick, he had no time to throw on every play. I think there were 25 people in the backfield with him. At least it seemed like that. Along with the fact that that is such a simple offense and they're not running any receivers out into the patterns, but it's not like he's really good at hitting wide open receivers. So why would you put a bunch of receivers in the pattern? This was, I guess, the perfect team for the Seahawks to play at this moment in time. It's going to give them some false confidence and make them think they've turned the corner when they really haven't. Oh, because by the way, how many times Russell Wilson get sacked last night? He got sacked quite a few times as well. The Seahawks are still a bad team. Masquerading is a good team to me. But so I got a mediocre team and the Seahawks beat a really bad team and the Niners. I don't see anything. I don't think either team can take anything away from this other than what they already knew, that neither one of them is good.
Okay, let me spice this one up, and I'm going to give you this dish, and hopefully you devour this one. But here we go, Chandler, here we go. First and foremost, I don't even know where I should go. Should I save the home team for last, because this is the best situation, or go with the away team and the winner in the Seattle Seahawks? So I go with the Seattle Seahawks. Now, mind you, they won the game. They put up 20 points in the game, and they have offensive weapons. But here goes something that I'm bothered by, and it's personal, because of my fantasy football team, because I'm watching it a little closer. Been watching this guy since he came out of college. Been in the league for quite some time, and has been wreaking havoc on a lot of teams that he's been in the league. And for some odd reason, they can't put it together while he is on this Seattle Seahawks team, and that being Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham spent the big portion of his game with one catch in the midst of this full entire game. Why is it a situation where Russell Wilson is having a tough time getting him the ball? Secondly, I want to look at the situation with Marshawn Lynch. Now, Marshawn Lynch struggled throughout the early portion of the season. Even me and you have discussed on several different occasions on the importance of Marshawn Lynch and him running the ball. He was actually the one interesting cog in this offense, being consistent, putting up another 100-yard day rushing on the San Francisco 49ers. He has done this for the sixth time in his career, tied with another running back that the name escapes me right now, but they are tied at the total of six right now for running backs to get over 100 yards up against the San Francisco 49ers. He was the only one that was actually the consistent cog offensively doing work up against the San Francisco 49ers defense. You got a good day out of, you know, Lockett getting five catches. You also had Kurtz, who had three catches as well. But it's looking like Russell Wilson's production throwing the ball has slowed severely. I want to know how you feel about this team moving forward. Now, mind you, they are still under 500. That's why I understand where you come with the mediocre term, because, to be honest, if San Francisco had any offensive prowess, they could have threatened to win this game. But San Francisco, again, might as well just got shut out. I mean, they kicked the field goal and hit one in the third quarter. They might as well just got shut out. But your thoughts on you know, question marks around Russell or this receiving core and how things are working with interesting names like, you know, Kurtz, Jimmy Graham. I mean, these guys are having silent days, and they just got away with the win in San Francisco.
Well, you know, again, I said in the offseason when they got Jimmy Graham that this was the first step in them changing what they do as a team. Russell Wilson is still not ready to be a drop back all the time passer. That's what they're trying to turn him into. I said before, this team will not win consistently asking Russell Wilson to throw them to a victory. Russell Wilson is a very good quarterback, but they haven't been as successful as they've been since he became the starter, because he was throwing 30 times a game. They weren't winning because Russell Wilson was leading the league in passing. They weren't winning because Russell Wilson was Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. They were winning because Russell Wilson was Russell Wilson, a guy who's not going to make the big mistake at the wrong time, but a guy who you build an offense around, an offense that's predicated on running the ball, strong defense, and a smart, heady quarterback. They're trying to turn this into Russell Wilson, Russell Wilson, Russell Wilson. This team is not built for that. This team is built to run the ball, on first down, run the ball on second down, screen play or a bubble screen or swing pass on third down. You understand what I'm saying? And then once you run, and the defense is sucked in, now you go down the field. Instead, they got Jimmy Graham, who doesn't fit this offense. He's not a blocking tight end. The offensive line is a sieve. So Russell Wilson is on pace to be sacked 60 times this season. I believe the numbers. I believe he's on pace to be sacked over 60 times. Okay?
Do you think that's a threat to end up getting him hurt this season?
I don't know if it's a threat to get him hurt, but I know one thing: you're not going to be successful in offense if your quarterback has people in the backfield with him on every play. Right. How is your quarterback going to be successful? You and I have talked about this. You look at some of these young quarterbacks who came into this league really hyped, and they went to bad teams with bad offensive lines, and they got – matter of fact, I think there's a statistic about how quarterbacks fare the season after they've been sacked over 40 times. And I believe none of those quarterbacks have ever had a winning record after that. Okay? I'm pretty – and there's people can look it up, but I'm pretty sure that I'm right on that. I'm not – I'm guaranteeing I'm right, but I'm pretty sure I'm right that I heard that somewhere. Okay? So I don't know if it's about him getting hurt, but at a certain point, he's going to start seeing ghosts. At a certain point – listen, look at Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck is not comfortable in the pocket. He's just getting rid of the ball because he's tired of taking sacks. Russell Wilson is getting hit all the time. They can't run. They're not running the ball because the offensive line is terrible. So what you're doing is you're asking Russell Wilson to make the first and the second defender miss, plus keep his eyes downfield, plus throw the ball, throw you to a win, plus try to figure out a way to get the ball to Jimmy Graham, who can't block to save his life and doesn't fit the offense. And are you kidding me? Russell Wilson ain't Superman, okay? They got to get better players around him.
Okay. Now, I hope you are ready for the other side of this dish in this situation. Let's talk about the San Francisco 49ers. And I don't know where to begin, Chandler. I don't know where to begin. All right. I can go to the head of the snake and Tom Sula, but I kind of want to save him for last. I kind of do. I also could talk about the remainder of this offensive core, and I want to talk about, like, the outside with guys like, you know, Vernon Davis, the receiving core as well. I really want to look outside of Anquan Boldin because I know Anquan can do special things, but these guys were completely a no-show last night. And then last but not least in the situation, Colin Kaepernick. I mean, this is a guy that Ron Jaworski pegged as being the greatest quarterback ever when it's all said and done. He said ever. Now, I don't even know if he was amounting Super Bowl wins or what have you, or if he was just total in awe in the way that he scrambled and made some of the throws in his first couple of seasons, but he pegged them as one of the best quarterbacks ever. I don't know where we want to go. I feel sorry that the defense is in such an unfortunate situation. Navarro Bowman being probably the one more consistent cog, but he's, you know, trying to bounce back from an injury from a season and some time ago, well, really two seasons ago, but it was a postseason situation in 2013 where he was hurt. Against the same San Francisco 49ers team, wherever you'd like to go, Chandler, whether it's the defense, the offense, or if we could just talk about the head of the snake of Tom Sula, we can. Where would you like to start?
Well, Jim Tom Sula is not at fault here. He's a sacrificial lamb. Everybody knows this man is not ready to be a head coach. Anybody who's ever played knows even a little bit about football can look at this team and see that Jim Tom Sula is overmatched as the head coach. That's not his fault. He was hired, and I think he accepted the job knowing that he was going to be thrown to the wolves. If all of the players who left this team were still here, do you know what the Niners would be? They'd be the Seahawks, a mediocre team. Why? Because the quarterback is being asked to do something he's not ready to do, which is throw this team to wins. Colin Kaepernick, I know he was upset with what Harbaugh did with him last season, but had Harbaugh been allowed to stay, he would have then been able to say to Colin, you see, Colin, this is why I'm doing things the way I'm doing them, because you're not ready to be this drop-back passer yet. You still have things to learn. And Colin probably would have listened and said, you know what, Jim, because he did respect the head coach, so you know what, you're right. I thought I was ready. I'm not. Okay, so let's modify the offense a little, but not too much. We're going to keep bringing me along and let me grow into the position, okay? But that didn't happen. Harbaugh's gone. Kaepernick has nobody to teach him how to play quarterback. Who's there to teach him how to be an NFL quarterback? If you look at, and I was watching some stuff earlier today before I went to work, and Brian Dawkins broke it down so well. They got nine people staying basically in to kind of block and all of that things. Nine people. If you got nine guys in the backfield on offense, then that means you only have two people in the pattern. two players, only 11 players on the field, right? So if everybody's blocking, trying to protect the quarterback, right, which means there's eight guys blocking, you got the quarterback, that's nine. That leaves you two receivers. Ty, there's four people in the secondary. So you double both the receivers. Where's he going with the ball? Where's he go? There's nowhere to go. And now if your offensive line is terrible, that means that even though you got eight guys blocking, right, those seven guys are still going to beat your eight guys because your eight guys are terrible. So guess what? Now you got two and three guys in the backfield with Kaepernick. He might be very agile and elusive and all of that. If three guys are around him, he's going to get sacked. He's going to get hit. So what's he do? He's throwing the ball in the ground. He's throwing the ball over guys' heads. When he does get time to throw, both of his receivers are double covered. So, again, where is he going with the ball? Now he's got to try to run and make something happen. When they can't get the running game going, as they have not been able to in most of their games, what you have is a defense that says they ain't got nobody to throw to. Anquan Boldin is a tough guy. He's a leader. He's all of those things. He ain't getting away from nobody, okay? He ain't outrunning nobody. He ain't beating nobody off the ball, Ty. He is a guy that's a possession receiver, okay? He's going to outmuscle guys. You want to run him across the middle because he's too big for them to really stop. But he's not running away from anybody. Who you got on the other side? Torrey Smith, who only knows how to run one route. He only runs one route. So, again, where's Kaepernick going with the ball? There's nowhere for him to go.
They got Vernon Davis back last night also.
And how'd that work out for him? Vernon Davis, come on, Vernon Davis checked out this season.
Well,
I'm calling it like this. Huh?
He led the team in receptions and receiving yards last night.
And how'd that work out for him? How many points did they score?
They scored a field goal. They got three points on the board.
Okay. So, again, if Vernon Davis was really the Vernon Davis from a few seasons ago, we all know Vernon Davis has the speed to get away from the people who are guarding or who are covering him. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, if they get down the way they're kicking field goals, that means they have some shots at the red zone. He's a tight end. Vernon Davis can beat somebody. You understand what I'm saying? But he's not making plays. Why isn't he making plays? Vernon Davis is checked out. He's like, man, I ain't trying to get hurt for y'all. Give me my check. Y'all tore this team down. You thought you were smarter than Harbaugh. You wanted to prove that you were smarter, and you already got your stadium. So you ran everybody off, and guys retired because they didn't want to be here to get hurt. Playing for you, so you know what? I'm not going to sacrifice for you. Give me my check. Vernon Davis is checked out, okay? He's just showing up and doing enough to get paid, and I guarantee you, either this week or next, Vernon Davis is going to be back on the sideline saying, oh, my ankle, my knee, my back, okay? And let's be honest. Go ahead.
I cannot win with them. I want winners.
There you go.
Who said that?
That was Singletary.
And who was he talking about?
Vernon Davis.
And look who he turned back into.
How about that?
Right. It's like Vernon Davis went back to the same Vernon Davis that came into the league fresh out of Maryland with the dreadlocks and everything. I mean, he's not on the field. And, you know, as far as they did get to a Super Bowl, you know, a few seasons ago, got to the NFC Championship a handful of times, and now it's looking like none of that ever happened. It is looking like they're going back to the 3-13 49ers again. I truly feel bad for a guy like Carlos Hyde, a running back that, you know, was a big-time star out of college and how he came onto the scene this season. He had a 100-yard day, and it's looking like I don't know where they're going to get that running attack again. I mean, Frank Gore fit this offense well. They watch him depart. They watch a lot of interesting people leave this team. And I don't know if San Francisco is ready to look at the bottom of this division being a questionable NFC West that we talked about just a few days ago.
And that's the thing, Ty. Listen, I keep saying this. Ownership itself doesn't really care. They can sell this as a rebuild. They have a brand new stadium in an area where people are dying to see football games. So those people are going to go to see those games no matter what. Okay? They're going to go see those games. They got a new stadium. For the next 3 years, it's a printing press for money. Okay? So you don't have to be good. Add in the fact that they can say, well, listen, we had so many defections, and we got a first-year head coach. Give us time. How much time? 3 years. This team is going to be bad for at least the next 2 years, at least. And when they decide they're ready to actually start winning again, Jim Tomsula will be fired. Okay? His job, he was hired to be the captain of the Titanic. He knew that when he accepted the job, but how many NFL head coaching jobs are there? Not that many. So whether you know you're the captain of the Titanic or not, if they offer you the job, you take it. You take it. So he did what he was supposed to do for his family. Vernon Davis is doing what he's supposed to do for the rest of his career and his family, which is not get hurt on his terrible team and hope like hell they cut you next season. You go play for somebody that might actually go, that actually has a winning team and a coach that can get the best out of you, okay, and you move on. But I said this in the offseason. This was their plan all along for this team to stink, and they can blame it all on Colin Kaepernick and that contract. Because now, if they have to cut him next season, what's the excuse now? Well, we don't have a quarterback. We got to get a quarterback. We tried with Kaepernick. Turned out he wasn't the guy. Guess what that means? 2 more years of losing.
And this is an interesting result to how quick these teams throw big contracts at players. And then it's like, well, where do you have money to use it to invest in the rest of the team? I mean, you soak it up into one player. The only team that's benefiting from this situation as of this season right now, the Cincinnati Bengals, and I know Chandler won't like to hear that. Andy Dalton with his $100 million contract, they're playing ball. But a lot of these quarterbacks that have these big contracts, Jay Cutler, Joe Flacco, Colin Kaepernick. I'm trying to think of these guys straight off the head. And interesting enough, I mean, I feel bad in throwing his name in the situation, but Dominique Sue and Calvin Johnson. You got a lot of these guys that have $100 million contracts, and all of these teams are struggling. All of them are under 500.
Don't forget Andrew Luck.
But Andy Luck's above 500. Well, Luck is above 500. And Russell Wilson.
But he's played terribly. He's played terribly, and you know it.
Right. I believe me, you are lying. I do know it because I do have a fantasy, and he's not helped me at all. And Russell Wilson's situation, I feel interested about because they just got the 3-4 out of the win last night. And next week, they play the Dallas Cowboys. And depending on if they bring Dez Bryant back this week or next week, I mean, it'll be Dez Bryant up against the Legion of Boom with Matt Castle. So this will be interesting enough. So the Seahawks look like they could put themselves back in a position to potentially be 500 again. So Russell Wilson might be in a safe card as well. But he's another one of those quarterbacks that I do agree with you. But the money that they do have are under 500. And just to throw another interesting name in there, Phillip Rivers also. Just to throw some of these big...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, to throw some of the big contract names into perspective, but go ahead.
And if you look at each one of these franchises, Ty, except for Seattle and Indianapolis, they're secretly in a rebuild mode. If you look at those franchises we've named, they're in a rebuild mode except for Seattle and Indianapolis. Detroit is trying to remake their team. We all know that. They aren't saying it because they're signing guys. But if you look at what they're doing, they're trying to remold and restructure that offense and how it's done. That's called the rebuild or remodel, whatever you want to call it. Okay, you look at San Francisco. That's a rebuild. Chicago. That's a rebuild. Okay, it's a rebuild. Miami. It's a rebuild. But What excuse can they give the fans? Well, we gave X player this amount of money. That player's not performing. Not my fault. It's his fault. Blame him. What do the fans do like sheep? They blame the player. Let me ask you a question. Who offered that player the money, Ty?
Management.
So who's actually to blame here?
Well, I guess we look at management. So do we turn this away from the production on the field and look at management right now, or do we talk about the key? Okay.
Because, listen, you knew And listen, when they gave Colin Kaepernick that contract, they knew he wasn't ready to be a Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, a Drew Brees, or even a Philip Rivers. He wasn't ready to be that. Then you don't pay him like that. You know, Jay Cutler, everybody and their mother knew Jay Cutler shouldn't have gotten that contract. They gave it to him anyway. Okay? Joe Flacco, okay, he won a Super Bowl, but we all know Joe Flacco wasn't the reason they won that Super Bowl. Let's be honest about that. He wasn't the reason. Okay, so if you think about it honestly, and Ndamukong Suh, were the Dolphins a defensive lineman away from the Super Bowl, Ty? No. No. When the Packers signed Reggie White to that free agent contract, at the time a really big one and all of that, were the Packers one player away from a Super Bowl? Pretty much, yeah, they were.
Definitely.
Pretty much they were. Were the Dolphins a player away from the Super Bowl? No. Then why would you give Ndamukong Suh $100 million? So you can blame Ndamukong Suh when the team stinks and you got to fire the head coach who you should have fired in the offseason. Okay? When you give Jay Cutler that contract in Chicago, knowing you're not a quarterback away from the Super Bowl, why? So that when things go south, as you knew they would when you gave him the money, because he'd already proven to you that he wasn't the winner, you can now lay all the blame at the feet of Jay Cutler. And fans like Sheik never want to take the look and say, well, look at the player's past. Look at his history. Look at where the franchise is when they give him the money. Think the franchise was that player away from a Super Bowl. And in none of those situations, none of them, was the team one player away from a Super Bowl, then why would you pay a guy like he was the missing piece to the puzzle?
I was the one telling you before this season started off that I wasn't big on Tannehill. He had something to show me. And oddly enough, they did put up a big amount of points on Tennessee, but Tennessee's still trying to figure out their identity. I want to see consistency with this Dolphin team also. But just like I said, all of these players that are, you know, nine-digit contract players. I mean, this is what they're going to have to beg a lot of these players to go out there and do is perform so they can win games off of the shoulders of these guys. And it's not looking like these guys can actually do it. And I feel bad because at certain points of the game last night, Colin Kaepernick was trying anything to force the issue. And it looked like he was pressing so hard. And it was looking like every effort he gave last night just wasn't working. So I don't know whether this offense turns it around quickly or if they do start to finger point or if people start to lose their jobs. And I don't want to see that. I really don't like seeing people get cut or fired or looking at that situation. But San Francisco can really not be this bad. Even with losing that many players, I mean, these guys have to fill the gap somehow, some way. Well, I think they are going to be at the bottom of the division. I really do. But the way that they looked, especially being at home, I could just imagine what it's going to look like when they do go to Seattle to play Seattle. I mean, this is at home. They only amounted 3 points. The call the number, 917-889-9592. Chandler, since we're rocking out, I do have to feed you. I do. Talk a little hardball, if you will. Now, beginning of this baseball season, Mr. Knight was talking all types of stuff about guys like Granderson and how these guys would be holding this team back. But for some odd reason, this Mets team found strength. I don't know if we could peg this to Ward Collins or Harvey or just some of the interesting names for this New York Mets team, but they have done it. They have gotten back to the World Series. And we haven't been on the air since Tuesday to talk about, you know, all of the sports in a live spectrum. But how do you feel about the New York Mets getting there and, to be honest, looking like the hotter team in the World Series right now? Now, obviously, the Blue Jays and the Royals have a game or two to play before they get to the World Series, so it's not fair to say just as of yet, but they have their own stuff to deal with. We don't know how this thing is going to end up tonight, but Chandler, your thoughts on this New York Mets team, and also, do you think the rest could end up hurting such a hot New York Mets team?
Well, to answer the second question first, yeah, I think the layoff will hurt them. But Granderson is not the reason they're in the World Series. Matter of fact, I'd be willing to pay.
I know.
You brought him up. I'd be willing to pay. He's batting less than 250 in the playoffs so far. The reason they're there is because of the trades that they made, specifically Yoenis Cespedes, a guy who is, for whatever reason, a lightning rod for attention. And guess what that did? That allowed all those other guys on that team who are not built for that type of spotlight to relax and play. David Wright might be the captain of the Mets. He ain't built for the spotlight. Not the way Cespedes is. Cespedes doesn't care what you think about him. David Wright does. Cespedes doesn't care if you think he should take a pitch. He's still swinging. David Wright's going to take a pitch if they start writing about how he's not taking pitches. I remember a few years ago when they kept writing about how he wasn't a home run hitter, he changed his entire swing and approach and tried to be a home run hitter. Remember? Remember David Wright was close to a 300 hitter, line drive guy? Then all of a sudden he started trying to hit home runs. What is he now, maybe a 260, 270 hitter at best? And now he's got a bad back? Funny how that works. Yoenis Cespedes and the trades they made allowed this team to basically take a deep breath and say, whew, the pressure's not on me anymore. And now those guys were able to perform. Add in the fact that Daniel Murphy played, you know, Daniel Murphy is this generation's Brian Doyle. For those of you who don't know, look it up. Look at what he batted in the World Series when he had to replace Willie Randle. Batted over 400. The reason the Yankees won the 1978 World Series was because of Brian Doyle. So you got Daniel Murphy playing like, you know, the greatest player in the history of baseball. You know, with the pitching they had, they were going to be in all of the games. The question was the offense. But I did say the Cubs were gonna run out of steam. They did. Right now, the Mets are looking good. I think if the Mets play the Royals, they lose. I think if they play the Blue Jays, they win. That's where I think the Mets are, because the Blue Jays suck. Okay? Let's be honest. Blue Jays stink. They've gotten to a couple of pitchers who had some bad innings, and, yeah, they can hit home runs, but the Blue Jays aren't built to win a World Series, so I think the Royals are. But the Mets, congratulations to them. Congratulations to Mets fans. Thankfully, their management finally made a trade that was actually beneficial to the team. And you see what this team can do if their management will just let the players know that they're in it with them. They made trades to help the team. They didn't trade away guys. They actually traded for talent. And you see what it did to that clubhouse. It energized those guys, and it allowed them, it's propelled them this far.
Okay, so it already kind of sounds like you have it pegged on what the ALCS is going to look like. Now, entering this Game 6 situation, I mean, why do the Royals bring this back home in the state of Missouri and show people why they are going to take care of business up against Toronto? Or do Toronto, the Blue Jays, stretch this to a Game 7 situation?
David Price is 0-7 as a starting pitcher in the playoffs. David Price is 0-7 as a starting pitcher in the playoffs for his career. That's why the Royals win.
So you don't think this offense puts it together today up in Kansas City at all?
David Price is 0-7 as a starter in the playoffs.
Right. No, I'm past Price. I'm talking about your Tulowitzkis. I'm talking about the Donaldsons.
It doesn't matter what they do, because if David Price can't keep the Royals off the scoreboard, and he won't be able to, then you're going to be playing from behind, and you're going to lose. It's really that simple. It comes down to David Price. If David Price gets battered around in the first couple of innings, the Blue Jays have quit in a couple of games already in this series. They've quit in a couple of games in this series, okay? I've seen them get down and quit. So if they get behind, they're going to lose. Period. End of story. That's how this team is built. This is not a strong team. It's not a mentally tough team. This is a team full of whiners and criers, okay? And if you want examples of that, just look at every time Jose Bautista makes an out, look at his reaction. It's never, okay, the guy just got me. It's the umpire. It's always a reason that he doesn't get a hit. It's never his fault. Teams like that don't come from behind.
Okay, Chandler, I hope you're ready for your entree, because I had it steaming in the kitchen yesterday, and obviously you had work to do. So now I have you settled into this kitchen. here at the round table, and I'm about to feed you, and I hope you're ready for your dish. Are you ready? Two words. Tristan Thompson. We brought this up in the kitchen yesterday, and everybody and their mother was looking for one chef and one chef only, Nostradamus. Your thoughts on how we have been talking about this since the season ended, that he was shooting for $90 million. He was shooting for 90. And he still wasn't even happy with the 82 that he got. And they mean to tell me, well, this is how I'm looking at it. I know you probably will spice this one up too. But they're going to have an $82 million player coming off of the bench because of Kevin Love. Your thoughts on this situation, because we did not get this to you yesterday.
This is the dumbest signing in the history of basketball. This is dumber than the contract that they gave that center that played for the Hawks out of Georgia Tech. He used to play for Georgia Tech. You know the one I'm talking about.
Schroeder, right? Something like
no,
that.
No. We're going back to the 80s. You know, his name will come to me. This is dumber than the contract the Sonics gave Jim McElvain. This is dumber than Nick signing what's his face? Jeez. I have so many names. I can't remember. No. Yeah, dumber than Houston. So no, that center who just stayed injured the entire time.
Jerome James. Jerome James.
This is dumber than the Knicks signing Jerome James. Oh my God, this is the dumbest signing ever. Okay?
Who is
this
the is Hawks, dumber? The Hawks center?
Huh?
I'm trying to think of the Hawks center that you're talking about. Who is the Hawks
white
center?
White guy played in Georgia Tech. It'll come to me. I might have to Google it while we're talking. This is dumber than the Chicago Bulls signing Ben Gordon and what's his face? The other one that does forward, Charlie Villanueva. This is dumber than the Charlie Villanueva signing. Okay? Because you had him at a disadvantage. Okay? He didn't sign a qualifying offer. So now he has to sign a multi-year deal if he wants to play. He can't now become a free agent and think he's going to go on the open market and get more money, because it's already been relayed to him by every team that, dude, ain't nobody going to give you no $40 or $50 million if you become a free agent. You can hang that up, because you're not a double-digit scorer. You're barely a double-digit rebounder. Oh, and by the way, you're a sub. You're a bench player. You really think you're not a cornerstone. You're not a franchise player. You're not a cornerstone player. You're not a building block player. The only team that you have any value to is the Cavaliers. You've overplayed your hand. They overplayed their hand, him and his agent. Okay? When they got offered that first contract, should have took it. When they got offered the second contract, should have took it. When they got offered the third contract, should have took it. Should have signed a qualifying offer. But hey, you know why he didn't sign a qualifying offer? Because at that point he realized, if I sign that and become a free agent, I might not get $8 million total in my next contract, because I really stink as a player. I'm really not that good. And the only team I have value to is the Cavaliers. Do you hear the Cavaliers? You have this dude over a barrel. Because if he wants, the only team he can play for is you, if he wants to play. You're the only team he can play for. And if he sits out the entire year, he's lost a year of money, and guess what? No one's going to offer him the money you've offered him. You could have offered him a two-year deal for $10 million, and he would have had to take it. You're paying luxury tax out the wazoo. So you give him $84 million. You give a guy who doesn't score 10 points in a game, doesn't pull down 10 rebounds in a game, a guy who's not going to play more than 20 minutes in a game, based on what the coaches said and how they're going to play Kevin Love, right? And if Kevin Love plays up to par, where does Tristan Thompson fit in, Ty? Where's who he's subbing? Who's he subbing in for? He's subbing in for Love. If Love is playing 30 to 40 minutes a game, Ty, how many minutes does that leave for Tristan Thompson? If LeBron's playing 30, okay. So let's say he takes 10 minutes of LeBron's, and he gets 5 minutes of Loves and say 5 minutes of Mozgov, right? That's 20 minutes. So for 20 minutes a game, you're paying a guy $84 million for a maximum of 20 minutes a game. A guy who's not a superstar, he's not an all-star, he's not a star, he's not a starter, okay? He's maybe your seventh man off the bench, because, oh, by the way, your sixth man off the bench is J.R. Smith. That's your sixth man, right?
Right, you're right.
Your sixth man is Amon Shumpert, depending on who you start at the two guard. Oh, didn't they bring in Richard Jefferson, by the way?
And they also have Richard Jefferson also, too.
Who's a small forward?
What
position is Tristan Thompson say? Small forward, power forward, right? So now Richard Jefferson might be your seventh man off the bench. So now you're talking about you're paying a guy $84 million to maybe be your seventh or eighth man off the bench. In what universe did this contract make sense for anybody but Tristan Thompson? In what universe? And don't tell me about, oh, how he almost, did you see what he did in the playoffs? Did they win a championship with him playing major minutes in the playoffs last year? No, they did not.
Not at all. Not at all. Taylor, we do have a caller here in queue calling in from the state of Georgia. We have Nas in the building. Nas, welcome to the roundtable. How are you feeling this evening?
Hey, man, like the great host Star says, I ain't had a bad day since I crashed my big wheel. Everything is good, sir.
Okay, and I heard you listening in. You wanted to give us the center down there in Atlanta. Who is the center in Atlanta from Georgia Tech?
He's talking about the great John Konkak.
Yes!
One of the worst contracts in sports history. Yeah, that boy was horrible. But he got paid. And flip that to this conversation right now to where we're talking about Tristan. Like, everything that Chandler's saying about Tristan as far as a talent is true. Like, he's not a great player. He's a good rotational player. He's a tremendous offensive and defensive rebounder. You got to give him that. He is young, got them spry legs, so those are factors in it. But the biggest factor weighing in it is his agent is Rich Paul. So that's LeBron's friend. So there's some tension that wants to be relieved there. Dan Gilbert doesn't want to go down that road again. He wants LeBron happy. I think the luxury tax was something that they agreed upon LeBron coming back. Like, yo, you're going to pay this. And Dan Gilbert's like, yeah, doesn't matter to me. I get LeBron back. My franchise doubled in value overnight. I already own downtown Detroit. I'm probably going to buy back Cleveland again. Like, Dan Gilbert, by the time LeBron is done, is going to be a multi-billionaire beyond what we ever would have thought from that plain-spoken, raggedy, payday loan, housing lending, raggedy predator dude that he is. But real talk, man, Rich Paul weighs a lot in this, man. And then the other factor is, think about the injury history of Varejão and Kevin Love. Kind of an insurance in case those guys get hurt. And then the biggest factor, the TV contract money that's flushed into the NBA. Franchises are more wealthy than they've ever been. So some of these numbers, which look ridiculous to us now, are going to be normal in a few years when we see some people getting even, you know, bigger. Like Chris Middleton, I think, got 80. Like, these contracts are going to get really, really, really big in the future. So you always got to factor all those things into this when you're talking about it. But, yeah, Tristan Thompson is a nice rotational piece. He's young, so there's some room to grow. But as far as what he is as a player now, for what we consider, you know, a reasonable salary, yeah, it does sound crazy, but there's a lot going on here. And remember, now they feel like it's better to keep an asset around and have that expiring deal when it does run out as an asset than it is to just let somebody walk away because it's so hard to hit in the draft and get, you know, a good piece. So I think that's the new way people do it in the NBA, in the sense of why let them walk away even if we have to overpay. Sooner or later, we'll be able to use this as a chip.
But here's the problem with that, Nas, and you're absolutely right in everything you said. The CBA is coming up. See, what these guys aren't paying attention to, and once again, the NBA Players Union, once again, is asleep at the switch. Because here's what's going to happen. All of these contracts to these guys who do not, and when I say don't deserve, I'm talking about in terms of basketball talent. I want players to get every dime they can get and then 5 cents more, okay? I want players in every sport to get paid, okay? Because these owners got the money to pay them, and they're making money hand over fist. I'm not feeling sorry for these owners. That's not what I'm talking about. Tristan Thompson, I'm glad you got your money. Like I said, the contract only benefits him. Don't benefit nobody else, and I'm happy for him. Matter of fact, I wish he'd have gotten $100 million simply because I like to see players get their money, all right? But looking at it realistically, these contracts are going to be used as the reason the NBA locks these players out, and most of the fans, like sheep, are going to turn around and start blaming the players, saying they're greedy, we need a hard cap, my franchise can't compete because I can't afford to do anything because I gave some guy named Chris Middleton, Tristan Thompson, you name the team, there's a player on that team who got a contract. Everybody said, what the hell? Okay, Thaddeus Young, whoever, my team can't compete because we had to get his guy money because the player union's so greedy.
I feel you 100. That's the argument they've used every time. Michelle Roberts, the new president, who seems to be really up on her game and really seems to be thorough, she seems ready for that argument, and I think she's going to use a lot of this data and the sales data and other metrics to say, no, that might have flown a few years ago, but you're not doing that with me. Like, I'm a real lawyer. I'm not one of these NBA guys who you set up to be your fall guy and beat up every time in negotiations. So I don't think it's going to roll that way with Michelle. She seems to be talking a pretty tough game. Now, that's easy to say right now before they get to the table and those owners start stonewalling, but we'll see. I will say this too, though. The lower-level NBA players are making ridiculous amounts of money. That strengthens the union during these lockouts. Because we know that infamous Kenny Anderson, I got bills to pay stuff from, you know, a few years back. You could say that was something that really hurt the union really bad because they had so much of them who needed to get a paycheck. Now, of course, yeah. Logic says just because they're making more money don't mean they're gonna spend it, you know, in a fashion to where they won't be in that position again. But you understand the theory I'm rolling with here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do. And again, you're right, but here's the thing. Josh Smith has already come out and said that nonsense by how he took a pay cut and he should have got more and he still got, you know, he got family. He's already said that nonsense already this offseason. And here's the problem with all of it is what we all know is the why do the players' unions always cave except in baseball? Because they're worried about what? The public opinion battle. And they always lose that one. So the players eventually cave because they're losing the battle of public opinion because, again, most of the sheep or fans, you know, I'm calling them sheep, they start going with the party line of the owners instead of actually looking at, well, who made you give Chris Middleton $80 million? You didn't have to give him $80 million. He didn't have five teams bidding for his services at 80, you know, at 60 and 70 and 80 million. Mm-hmm. You were the only one negotiating with him, you know?
Yep.
So – yeah. Again, you're right.
And this goes to that great point that Max Kellerman always makes, that the salary cap period is an artificial way of saving the owners from themselves. You remove the salary cap, turn into a baseball thing, you have people spinning themselves into oblivion. So you put in the salary cap and you limit labor's potential to make money that they actually should earn. So Tristan Thompson, that $80 million he gets, you're basically talking about him taking money out of the stars' pockets who can never really gain what they're supposed to gain. So the LeBrons, the Kobes, and these guys who can never actually get what they're worth, some of that spills out into their pockets in a way. But, yeah, the salary cap, no matter what, it's an artificial way to minimize how much labor is paid. But, yeah, I'm right with you on that, man. They're going to have a tough fight with the ownership, man, because, like I said, we still don't know what's coming in globally. Like, the NFL is begging for other markets. They're trying to go to London, doing all this other stuff. The NBA is not. The NBA has other markets begging for it. Basketball is bigger than it's ever been globally, and we don't know how much money is pouring in, man. All of these games are being broadcast everywhere and all of this stuff for social media with just a dunk being displayed, you know, millions of times here. Imagine how that goes through the basketball community in China. You know what I mean? Like the meme of DeAndre Jordan. Imagine how much that goes through there. So The players are once again in a tough position as far as negotiating, but hopefully they don't fold like we've seen in the past.
Okay, well, Taylor, I know this is something that you wanted to talk about, so anything left behind Tristan Thompson before we get away from it?
No, I mean, we've touched it all, man. Like I said, you know, I'm happy for Tristan Thompson. I'm glad he got his money. But I just, down the road, man, you watch and see these same contracts going to be used to beat the players over the head once again. And the next fan, Cleveland or otherwise, whose team signed one of these guys, first time I hear you talking about my team can't compete because I'm coming for you.
Right. And let me just add the cherry on this, which is, I say this in basketball and football, the majority of the fan base actually is not only jealous of, but there's a little bit of hatred for the athletes on the field. They like the field and the court. They like what they do for them as far as entertainment, but as far as people, they genuinely dislike them, and that's why they're so easily misled by these narratives given by the ownership whenever there's some type of labor dispute. So it is what it is. Just check your Twitter and your Facebook and read some of the things fans say.
Okay, we do have a caller queue. If you're ready to rock and roll, let me know. Press 1 if you want to get it here. If not, I'll leave you out there. Any other topic that you guys would like to discuss, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, that we could address, or I could talk about the one that is actually personal to me, and I wanted to see how you guys felt about it.
Go ahead.
Okay, the silence helps me. Now, I know you guys probably have not been keeping a close eye to this, but as of today, another teenager dies in high school football. This is the seventh death since the beginning of September across the country. The question that I have is, are they going to draw a line in high school football? Because this is severe. This is severe. Now, I don't know if some of the deaths may have come from, you know, heat exhaustion or being out there in the latter part of the summer, or if these are actually, you know, injury infracted on the field, you know, stuff like that. So I wanted to see how you guys felt about this. This is the seventh death in a month and a half time, or a little over a month and a half. I wanted to see how you guys felt about this. Throw this one around the kitchen. Chandler, I'll let you set this one up. I know you probably didn't hear about it, but your thoughts about it in high school football.
Actually, Ty, I saw it scroll across the, you know, that little ticker tape deal that ESPN has. I saw it while I was watching Kornheiser and Wilbon, and I wanted to see if they would even talk about it. Of course, they didn't, because no one cares that these kids are dying. No one cares. Because not for nothing, I didn't realize this. I'm sure Nazos, I never knew this. You know, coming from New York, I mean, high school sports is kind of big, but it's nothing like it is in the South and even here in the Midwest, in these small towns where, I mean, high school football is like a religion. You understand what I'm saying? So, no, they're not going to draw a line in the sand. I mean, high school football, these people treat like it's pro football. In some of these places I've lived, you know, in the South and in the Midwest, where, you know what, you're going to play, and the coach is going to run you in the ground, and, oh, you ain't hurt, get out there, and all that stuff there, man. And, you know, and that's the families, that's everybody's communities. So I don't know what we can do about it, man. It's sad. It's sickening, actually. You understand what I'm saying? It's sickening because these kids are treated in many ways like they're professional athletes. They're asked and expected to go out there and basically destroy their bodies like they're professionals, man. It's a high school sports game that literally kids are playing. These are not college athletes. These are kids. Half of them haven't even hit their growth spurt yet.
Right.
They haven't even hit their growth spurt, okay? And you got this spring practice and fall practice and winter practice and the solstice practice and practice and, you know, three-a-days and triple this and, you know, I'm not trying to be funny, but I mean, that's what it is, man. And these are children. And their own families, in many cases, are the biggest culprits in this. You know, with those kids in Texas, when they hit the ref and all of that, and they're never going to play football again, like that was the biggest problem. Not that they got suspended from school, Ty. Not that they had to change schools. Not that that was going to affect their graduation, most likely. No, it was that they wouldn't get to play high school sports again. That was the lead. Think about that for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. Not that it could impact this kid's going to college, right, and getting an education. It was that they wouldn't be able to play high school football again. That's where we are with it.
Yeah, man. Wait, hold on.
And oddly enough that you did throw that out there, Taylor, those kids didn't do that on their own will. The coach told them to go hit that referee. not those kids. The coach told them to do that. So that's even crazier in its own right. Okay, Nas, I'll let you have at the situation. I hear you already ready to eat on this situation.
Yeah, I'm gonna go to what Chandler was just talking about before I go to the other part. But yeah, the fact that they were talking about them losing high school football as if that was some kind of severe punishment is already laughable. But then you think about a culture to where a coach has so much power as far as how we see them and how much respect and credibility they're given, that he could get away with telling kids that and that they would obey. And then the fact that, just think about the average person you know. Somebody yells at, a teacher yells at their kid, man, parents showing up at the school. Don't you ever talk to my child like that, yada, yada, yada. They find out the coach yelled, spit in their face, and got aggressive with them. Well, toughen up. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's this deference to coaches that we have in this country that is really, really weird, especially in football. So, yeah, those two young kids were wrong. But, of course, the adult who's supposed to be the so-called, you know, I guess CEO of the situation, his judgment is the one that should be called into question first, because he's the one in the position of authority. Going to the original topic, though, another death in high school football. More and more parents are pulling their kids out of football early on. They're learning about CTE. They're learning about concussions. This Will Smith movie is going to give even more ammo to that. So, yeah, man, and this is another sad fact of life, man. Probably 30 years from now, we're all going to be watching the Thanksgiving Day flag football, touch football game. Like, the NFL will have to change eventually, and society will have to change eventually, just because of how dangerous and how deadly this game that we actually all love is. You know what I mean? Like, we never used to have to see the remnants of it. They only brought out the guys who came out pretty well. Those are the guys on TV and got the jobs and all of that. But now with social media and the internet and the fact that we're going to know where – we're not only going to know where Tom Brady is, we're going to know where Mike Vrabel is and guys like that. And when you see these people degenerate before your eyes, it's going to be hard to justify all of this. So football is going to be scaled down in violence, man. You know, as we age. And, of course, people are going to say that's because the country's getting softer and, you know, all that other kind of stuff. But, man, look, we love a violent game. Sometimes you just got to deal with your hypocrisy. You know what I mean? I don't want to see people get out there and get destroyed, but I've grown up on football, love football. I probably will come to a better, you know, a better understanding in a few years or a more mature standpoint on this. But as of right now, I am still a huge football fan, watch it all the time. And still have to deal with the morality of, we know what happens to the bodies afterwards.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, is it a situation where they got to teach these kids how to tackle all over again? I mean, these are some things that they're going to have to look to, or just like Chandler's hitting on the two-a-day practices. You know, you got some instances where some of these coaches do try to push three-a-days, but I think that's actually something that they have to watch closely, because they can get in trouble for trying to force three-a-day situations. At least from what I'm hearing. But seven, that's an alarming number. That is an alarming number in a sport, too. This is just a sport. Like, these guys are student athletes. Like they have, they're supposed to have lives ahead of them, you know? And I think that's far too big of a situation, let alone in a sport that we all love and a lot of them love as well. And looking at this situation as being their ticket out of their situation, whether they're a backfield guy from a country area somewhere in the United States, or being an inner city kid that's struggling to see ends meet with their family and their situations. I mean, a lot of these kids are giving it their all, and it's unfortunate. Now, I'm trying to understand what they're going to do next, or what guidelines they have to follow before this actually gets severely out of hand. This is alarming. At least to me, I took it personal just to know that it's 7 kids in a month. In a month.
But Ty,
scary, man.
Here's the thing, though. Here's what happens now. Coaches aren't allowed to do some of the practices they used to do. So what happens is one of the team leaders will hold what they call team organized deals where the coaches aren't allowed to be there. But it just so happened that the coach had printed up, you know, what he would have done, you know, had they been allowed to practice, say, and some kind of way that kid gets a hold of that sheet, which lays out exactly what they should be doing if the coaches were there. And then you have somebody in the community because, you know, like I said, it's not just the school. You know, you got people in the community who are pushing these kids like, you know, because they live and die with high school football. You 50 years old, yet you living and dying with a high school football game. And you know what I'm saying? I got a problem with that, but whatever. So now one of them is there as a de facto coach, but they're not affiliated with the school. So this is all legal. You understand what I'm saying? So they're still making these kids practice, but it's under the guise of, well, they all got together and decided on their own. Come on, man. You know doggone well. You know doggone well that it was suggested by the coaches that, well, you know, if you guys want to get together, we can't stop you. And if you do happen to get together, this is what I would do if I were there. You understand what I'm saying? Guess what that is? That's a practice held by a coach.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And another thing, too, man, real quick. Institutions, what they love to do, that they don't like to kill the golden goose, so they like to put in small incremental changes and act as if that reform will fix what's the essential problem. So when they say, okay, it's going to be heads-up tackling, we're going to make sure we watch hydration, we're going to do all these different things, no matter what, you're not getting away from the violence that is football. So these are incremental changes to make us feel good about watching. It's like a morality little hustle they pull off. The same way when, like, say you have an out-of-control cop, and somebody says he just needs sensitivity training or he needs to be trained over again. It's like, no, he shouldn't be a cop. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the reality and the real fix. But if you want to go through those incremental changes, you can continue to operate as usual for as long as you can pull it off. And that's kind of what we have with football, man. But I don't know. Like, I think football is going to have a huge generation gap eventually because us who grew up watching what we would call real football and our children and our children's children who are going to be watching a different version, I don't think we'll be interested at all.
Okay. Anything left before we start to wrap up here at the round table, man? I knew that this would actually probably shake some or get personal opinions, but I'm telling you, I'm not going to lie. When I seen that, I was extremely rattled to see that type of number, Sports City. I'm not going to lie. Like 7. Listen, this is their count from the beginning of September to October 23rd. We're not even done with October, people. We're not even done with October. They have games, like, okay, where I'm from right here, right now, they got a game tonight, Friday night. Saturday they play.
Yeah.
What if something happens tonight? We're having something tomorrow. Like, that's a gaudy number.
But look, man. There are a lot of things that football can provide in your life that will help you, too, as far as character and learning team concepts and, you know, fighting for one another and all the different things that you can get from football, which you can't get in other arenas, I will say. But I got to ask both of y'all right now, like, would you allow your son to play?
I wouldn't. I wouldn't, no. I wouldn't let my kid play any organized sport right now, honestly. And, Ty, you know how much I love sports. Because I see how adults, I mean, I coached a little bit of Little League and stuff like that, and I see how the parents are and how coaches are and how they start living through their kids. And as much as I love sports, Ty, I think I turn into one of those parents. You understand what I'm saying? So, no, I wouldn't. If they chose to do it, I would have to not be involved. I'd have to not be involved at all because – my fear is I would turn into one of those cats you see screaming at the umpire because you called strike 3 on my son. You understand what I'm saying? So, no, I wouldn't.
How about you, Nas? What about you? What would you do?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to say no on football. I'm going to have to push him to another sport if that was me. And I'd start early, but I'd push him to another sport. But I don't want to put names out there, but I will say a kid who came up under my class in school, his father was one of those kind of dads. And that kid eventually made it to the NBA, and now they have a bad relationship because of how hard he pushed him and made basketball all his life. So, I mean, yeah, those things can be – you never know.
Wow. The things that
like
make
somebody
you go
shooting out here.
Wow. Well, you stay safe. Now I'm concerned. Now I'm up in touch. I'm hanging on a touchy topic, and they blasting outside of my boy house in Atlanta, man. Listen, you tell your family to stay low if they're in that household with you, man. Oh, man.
We're just a couple blocks away.
But that's good. Well, I'm going to tell you a quick story before we get out of here, because I was in Atlanta and something like that happened, too. I don't know how long you've been in Atlanta or you're a lifer, but in
about
2000, it was before the 10 years, 2002. And I'm not gonna lie, I was about to turn 21. And my Sonics were in town playing the Atlanta Hawks. It went to triple overtime. This was Jason Terry was on the Hawks. And the Hawks ended up winning. I'm pissed off, going toward the parking lot. I get to the car. We leave. We get on the highway to go back to the hotel. This guy is outside of Phillips Arena having a shootout with Atlanta police with an AK. And you know how that ended. He did not make it home. He did not make it to the jail cell either. But this is what I'm saying. This was in Atlanta. This was in Atlanta. And I'm talking about, like, literally, we got to the car, got to the highway, and it's like 12 cop cars out there. I'm like, what's going on? We get home, see what was happening on TV, and it was a shootout right outside of Phillips Arena. Like, we were just walking across the street, and he must have been right behind us or around the corner or something going at these guys. But I had to get that one out just for city.
That's crazy.
I'm telling you, the world. The world. Now, that's my answer to everything now. The world. That's it. The world. It's just the world today. All right. I need plugs and close outs from each of you as we shut this one down. We touched on a little controversy. Chandler, I don't know if you follow baseball, but I'm going to try and see how you feel about it also. I need plugs and close outs from each of you. Now, I'm going to get you to go first. Who do you like in the matchup tonight? Blue Jays or the Royals? And a plug, close out, shout out, anything that you like to promote as we shut it down here at the Roundtable.
Yeah, once again, I will couch my statement in as the lowest baseball IQ ever to appear on your show. I will say, since I used to rock a Toronto Blue Jays jersey back in the day because it was fly, I'm rolling with the Blue Jays. Shout out to Pedro's curl.
Anything that you like to promote or shout out before we get out of here?
Wait a minute, Pedro's Expos, right? You see?
Yeah,
I'm not a baseball guy.
He was Expos, but because he's been on TV, so I thought you were referring to him like that. Okay, that's cool. Yeah, okay. But Mr. Knight, you already know what to do at this time in the portion of the show. Thank you for coming on down here and helping us shut down another episode of the Roundtable. You know what to do. And who are you going, Blue Jays or Royals? I already heard you're going Royals because you don't like Toronto. Is that for sure?
Yeah, I'm going with the Royals, man, because I can't stand the Blue Jays and Jose Bautista whining ass. Nice, thanks for coming, man. You know, you always bring a great aspect and you know, thought process to the show. Ty, thanks for having the show. I mean, I started working, so I got to kind of get a schedule. So some, you know, I may not be around for some of the shows or whatever, but, you know, other than that, man, a lot of fun. I'm about to go walk my dogs and lay down.
I hear that. Same to you, man. Much respect to y'all and y'all show. And thanks for giving me let me get on, man. My bad, Ty. I just had to throw that thanks back, man, because y'all definitely get up.
I tried to ask you for the second time before you got out of here if you had anything left. If you had anything left, and here goes now, so in another, I tell you, Sports City, this is what I have to deal with. Even when I try to second guess them on trying to get these clothes off, and they still want to get, I want to shout out Pookie, Ray Ray. You know, this, look, I'm trying. I'm trying for his video. I try to let him get it all out of their system.
Don't forget Dejanay and Amaretta and Tennessee and Cristal.
and look for it. You see, I got to deal with Chandler, my brother and co-chef. And this is what I got to deal with, man. I don't know. I don't know Sports City. But check us out, man. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, the chefs. Check us out 7 days a week. The boys stay busy. A very interesting Saturday coming up. I'm at the edge of my seat. My Canes play Clemson at noon. And, boy, was this dude talking trash. I mean, he even got racist. He got racist, man. So all I'm saying is I hope my boys pull it out. I hope they pull it out, because if they do, I'm going to be all over this dude page going crazy. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chefs again, and if they don't know, now they know.
We did it like that, and now we do it like this. We did it like that, and now we do it like this.
Yeah. Now, block, kids, who got the cocaine? Don't tell me it's the little kids on the boat train. The metaphor sent from my brain to my jaw. It comes from other places, not the tinted faces. Journalistic values are yellow, and then of course falters. You watch Channel Zero with that bitch Mama Lawton. She have you believe black invented crack. When President Lyndon had the formula way back in 63 with Kennedy. Yes, the double cross. Remember that's when they blow his fucking head off. Vietnam vets come back looking like one-armed pets. Nixon bombs, pure tech. No picket fence, no job, no angel in the car. Pressed in your chest, Demerol for cess, no dough, crack and veils much less. White he can sell on the corners of Bushwick. White he can sell on the corners of Flatbush. White he can sell on the corners of Bed-Stuy. Pass the torch to that nigga guy. So just die, nigga, die, nigga. You're too black, you can't handle, you're too strong, get high. Fly clock, next boost your steel. In 95 we take back Emmett Field.
Let's take a sec to think back.
Brooklyn, traveling distance to party. Brooklyn, abstinent functions, that's hardly Brooklyn. The name alone holds godly. You don't know, you better ask.